Okay, welcome back. Here we are another week and we are continuing. So last week we didn't do that much, but we'll see what we get through today. We were in the middle of the bracha of Barech Aleinu, which, as we mentioned, this is actually the last of the personal, so to speak, brachas. This is the bracha for Parnasa, for us. We're asking Hashem for our physical sustenance, for our physical needs. And it's known as Berchas Hashanim. And we mentioned that we ask Hashem, we mentioned this last week, to supply us, that we should have enough of our needs to last us for the full year. We went through all of that last time. We're just going to continue today because there was a lot of beautiful ideas that we didn't manage to get through last week on this bracha. And just to mention one more thing, we did talk about the fact that the bracha begins Barech Aleinu, that Hashem should bless. Well, we say He should bless us, but Barech Aleinu really means, so to speak, on us, upon us. And we did discuss it last time, and we mentioned that Hashem should bless the year for us, according to one opinion, it should be Aleinu, according to our actions, which sometimes we don't want, but what we ask for is that we should be deserving of the brachas that we receive. So Hashem should give us assistance that we should act properly so that we're actually deserving of a year full of bracha. Another very beautiful thing that, I don't remember exactly who said it, but somebody explained very beautifully that sometimes we might think that it would be ideal for us not to have to ask Hashem to give us all of our needs, rather that it should just be automatic. And we know when we look back to the beginning of creation, we learn the story of the Chet Eitz Hadas, the sin when Adam ate from the tree. And we know that afterwards, everybody who was involved got punished. And the punishment of the Nachash, of the snake, was that he would eat sand. That was one of his punishments, right? That he would sort of creep on the ground and that he would eat sand. And we know there's a very big question about that, because in a sense, what's the curse of eating sand? In a way, it's actually the biggest blessing, because it is impossible for him to ever run out of food. There's enough sand forever and ever for as many snakes as there are. It's just never going to run out of food. So what's the curse in that? And it's explained that the curse is that the Nachash, because he has an unlimited amount of food, he never has to ask Hashem for anything. So there's never a connection, never a conversation. There's never an interaction between the snake and God. And this is the famous idea that if we love somebody, the truth is we want to give them everything that they need. But in a certain way, like with a little child, you know, you like to give a little bit so that, because it's so adorable when they come and ask you again. You want to see them again and again. And this is part of what we have to concentrate when we say Barech Aleinu every day and we think that, oh, Hashem, can't you just make it automatic? No, Hashem wants us to ask because He wants our interaction. He wants the conversation. So that shows how much He treasures the relationship. So that's also something important to remember as we are beginning to say. Also, we did talk about the fact that it's L'Toiv, and we'll discuss it a little bit more soon. But the word Toiv, as we mentioned, that's one of the reasons why it was the ninth bracha, because Tes is nine, which is Toiv. But there's another thing with Toiv. Toiv doesn't just mean good. In the Torah, when it talks about Toiv, it says, like, on the second day of creation, it doesn't say the word Toiv. On the third day, it says it twice. So one of the reasons is because on the second day, there was division. And on the third day, sort of peace came, was restored. And there's only good only exists within a state of peace. But there's another reason. On the second day when Hashem separated the waters, He didn't actually complete the job. He completed it on the third day. So on the third day, we actually have two separate creations, the completing of the waters where they were, and then the vegetation. When something is incomplete, it is not considered good. When we ask here, Barech Aleinu es Hashana Hazayis L'Toiva, for good, we're asking that Hashem should give us sustenance in a complete way, in a way where we are truly sustained, where we truly feel that we don't need any more. Now that's a little bit of a challenge, because in the physical realm, we always feel we need more. We're never satisfied. But that's perhaps part of the bracha, that we should realize that we have enough and we should be satisfied with what we have. And that could be hinted to in the word L'Toiva, that it is complete. Okay, But let's go now. We're just going to go a little bit more in depth also about this concept of L'Toiva. So we also mentioned last week, and we went quite at length about the beautiful thing about how if Hashem judges us once a year, what does it mean, the judging? Why are we asking every day if Hashem already decided what we're going to have? And we went through a whole beautiful thing according to the Baal Shem Tov. It's how we accept it. Every day we're judged anew for how we're going to accept it. But there's another very beautiful way to look at this. And I'm just going to read you a little bit from, this is a quote from the Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Gemara Rosh Hashanah that when Hashem judges us on Rosh Hashanah, there's an interesting question because he's judging us for the coming year. And the question is, what is he basing it on? So we might say he's basing it on how we behaved up until now and perhaps how we are behaving on Rosh Hashanah. But what happens if throughout the year we start to act differently? We had good intentions when we began, but we don't actually fulfill those good intentions and we're not really deserving of the bracha that Hashem has designated for us for throughout the year. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says that Hashem, the pasuk tells us that Hashem, Einei Hashem Alekecha, but that the eyes of Hashem are upon the land of Israel. And the Gemara says, Itim L'Toiva, sometimes he looks at it for good. Itim L'Ra'a, and sometimes he looks at it in a negative way. What's the difference? What's for the better and what's for the worse? So he says, what is an example of this for the better? So if the Jewish people were completely wicked on Rosh Hashanah, and therefore Hashem decreed a very small amount for during the year, what does he do? And let's just say, afterwards they changed their ways and they improved. So the Gemara says, he can't give more rain than he promised. He promised only a certain amount of rain. That's all there is. That's what was designated. But what does Hashem do? Hashem makes the rain fall in the proper time. So the little bit of rain goes a long way. And not only does it come in the proper time, but it comes in the proper place and in accordance to the person's specific need. And what's an example for the worst? So the people were very good on Rosh Hashanah. Hashem, you know, gave this massive amount of rain and brachas and designated, and then they don't deserve it afterwards. Could happen. What happens? So it says Hashem makes the rain fall unseasonably and in places that do not need it. So again, every day there is something about what we are davening that does affect how we will receive the brachas that have already been decided before. And as they say, like Hashem makes like a basic calculation on Rosh Hashanah, and every single day our davening could, so to speak, according to this, it could direct it more properly. Perhaps it might even be able to increase it. Now we come to a very beautiful thing. So this I'll show you. This is from a very famous Sefer called Sefer HaIkrim. Sefer HaIkrim, written by Reb Yosef Alba, explains very beautifully a philosophical concept. It's a philosophical sefer, and he discusses philosophical ideas. And the question he asks is, if a person has already had a decree set upon him, if Hashem has decided something, why should he daven? Like, what's the point? Can we actually change what Hashem has decreed by our davening? And specifically, this bracha is very specific because we're really asking that Hashem should decide the amount of rain and the amount of sustenance and the amount of physical good that we have. And as we say, we already know Hashem is writing it in the book on Rosh Hashanah. So what does this mean that we daven? So he reads he says a very beautiful thing. I'm just going to read you some of this in English because it's actually very beautiful how the way he sets it out. First he sets out the argument that people have, and some people say that Hashem never changes, and therefore whatever he decided. So there's really no point in our davening every day or improving our behavior. But then he says this approach is not true. For the influences from above come down upon the recipient when he is on a certain spiritual level and state of preparation to receive them. This is a very important thing, the state of preparation. And if a person does not prepare himself, he withholds this good from himself. And he gives a mashal, an allegory. He says like this, if on high it was decided that a person's crops should prosper in that year, and what happens? He neglects to plow, he neglects to sow, right? So he does nothing. He sits in his house and he just does nothing. So we're talking even in the physical way. What happens? Hashem might not, the crops won't prosper. I mean, no matter how much rain Hashem is going to bring, if there's no seed that is in the ground, nothing is going to grow. So he the person himself is withholding the good from himself by not putting in that little bit of effort, so to speak, not making, as we would call it, a keli, a vessel for the blessing which Hashem really wants to give him. And the same thing he says, that if a certain negativity was ordered upon a person, and because he was behaving in a negative way, then what could happen? Something good could happen. And he says a very interesting thing. When people say that we cannot change the divine will by prayer, the answer is that the divine will in the first place is that the decree should be realized if the person in question continues in the same state. So maybe we don't necessarily change the divine will, but what we can change is ourselves. And if we change ourselves, we're a new person. And we're a new person, we have a different divine will. So it's a very beautiful idea. So changing ourselves actually changes the blessings that we will receive. So it is worth it to daven every day, because as we said, the whole idea of davening is that we are connecting to Hashem, and thereby, obviously, we are elevating ourselves to a level which is a little bit beyond what we were yesterday, and hopefully, now we are worthy of receiving the blessings that Hashem does have, because He's infinite and always has blessings ready for us. Now there's another very beautiful idea that a lot of the commentaries discuss about this bracha that we should have in mind. And this is a fascinating one. It says like this. We want from Hashem's bounty, right? When we read the bracha, we said, let's see, v'sabeinu mituvecha, from your good, right? We should be satisfied from your good. We don't just say from good, we say from your good. What does it mean from Hashem's good? So I'll read you one beautiful thing from Rabbi Yonis and Eibschitz, one of the very, very famous halachic experts, one of the achreinim, a tremendous tzaddik, and he says a beautiful thing. He says like this. He says, I'll read you some in English, and I want to read some of the words in Hebrew because he says it so beautifully. It is fitting that at least during the morning prayers, a person should wish that Hashem provide his daily sustenance in a permissible rather than in a forbidden manner. For if there is the slightest trace of forbidden in his food, it will sully his whole body and not provide sustenance for the soul. The beautiful language that he uses is he says, Imhan mazan kulay ah. He says, ah, but if the food is acquired in a permissible way, then he says, Im ha mazan kulay beheter, yesh by mazan l'neshama. Then the sustenance is not just for the body, but it's also sustenance for the soul. So you can see what he's leaning to, and we'll develop it in a minute. We want sustenance. We all need to live. We all need bread to eat. Unfortunately, in certain terrible circumstances, a person might feel that they have to resort to things which are not really permissible. Perhaps they have to steal for their loaf of bread. So here we're davening, and obviously, thank God, we're not in that situation. In ours, it's a little bit more, it's a little bit more subtle. But unfortunately, sometimes people can feel that they won't be able to manage if they go exactly according to the law. And here we say, no, Hashem should make sure to provide us that we should have enough and we should be able to do it properly. We should work in a totally legal way, that we should be able to earn our money. It shouldn't be sullied money. And we know he says a beautiful thing, because if we earn in the permissible way, then what it does is it enables us to be able to raise the sparks of holiness, which is in the food, to Hashem. Because if we're earning it in an illegal way, well, then we can't raise the sparks of holiness. It doesn't work that way. And that's why we say that his food should be given in a clean, from a clean and pure source, and not from an unclean one. So that's one way of putting it. Now, this has been developed by many other great people who explain very beautifully that this is connected. We said this is the ninth bracha, and everything's very hashgacha pratis. So the ninth bracha corresponds to the chapter in Tehillim. It's not the ninth chapter, it's actually the tenth chapter. But according to many opinions, the first two chapters, remember we've mentioned this is one. So it's still the ninth chapter. It's called Perek Yud, but it also could be considered the ninth chapter. What does David HaMelech say in the ninth chapter of Tehillim? So I'm just going to read you a few of the psukim, beautifully, what he says, and it's amazing how it so connects. He says, first I'll read you one pasuk beis. Begayvas rasha yidlak ani. The wicked man in his arrogance pursues the poor. And then he goes on and he says, Ye'erev bamistar, this is in pasuk, in the ninth pasuk, he lurks in his hiding place, ke'aryeh b'sukkah, like a lion in his lair. Why? Lachtaif ani, to seize the poor. Yachtaif ani, he seizes the poor, b'machshchai b'rishtai, when he draws his net. What's he talking about here? He's talking about that this, and this is what the commentaries tell us, not only do we hope that we will earn our money in a legal way, but we actually hope, and we daven here for two things. We daven here that generally, the world should be a more honest place, so to speak. That people shouldn't be robbing the poor. That society shouldn't be robbing the poor. When we say the word robbing the poor, and that's what David HaMelech said. You see, he says, the wicked man in his arrogance pursues the poor. And he hides and he tries to seize the poor. Why would you want to rob from the poor? It's much more worthwhile to rob from the wealthy. Who wants to rob from the poor? The poor has nothing to give you. What is David HaMelech talking about here? So it says David HaMelech is talking about something much more, if you want to say, insidious and much more evil than just a simple robber who robs from a wealthy man. This is sometimes, unfortunately, we find it now quite a bit, this can sometimes be a societal attitude. When people in business don't act 100% correctly, what do? They inflate prices just because they could, not because it's justified, but just because they could. Who are they hurting more? The poor people. The wealthy people have the money to buy the food, but the poor person who doesn't have the money, he's the one that has to pay the extra price, obviously, and is unable, therefore, to buy enough for what he needs. So this is what David HaMelech is talking about. David HaMelech in the Tillim, in our bracha that we are saying, we ask Hashem that he should make it that people should have the proper attitude, that people should understand that since everything anyways comes from Hashem, we should be leading our life in the most moral, ethical way possible. And when we work in business, whatever type of business we work in, we should do it properly, both ourselves and the people and the society around us. Because otherwise we hurt the most vulnerable people in the society. And that's a very big fear. So that's what we're asking for here also in this. And that's why, it's, as we say, it's the ninth bracha. Okay, just want to see a little bit more here. Then we say like this. After we ask that we should taka ask, that we should taka earn it properly, and we should be able to be the, so to speak, the source that everybody around us should have enough and it should be good. Then we also say that we should enjoy it, like mituvecha, it should be good for us. What does this mean, it should be good for us? We mentioned it a drop last week, I'll just tell you quickly. So here again, a lot of the commentaries on the Siddur say what we are davening for here is we're asking Hashem for prosperity. But prosperity can sometimes have some negative kind of things. It can lead to some negative results. Amongst them, arrogance. So we ask Hashem to protect us not to become arrogant if we have enough. Not to have worries. We know that's a big one. Mar benechasim, as we mentioned. Mar bedaige. The more we have, the more we worry. And of course, Hashem should protect us from greed. Unfortunately, and this is quite a sad thing to see, we would think that the more we have, the more we'll share. Sometimes it doesn't work that way. The more we have, the greedier we become. And here we're asking Hashem that he should give us a lot, right? We should have an abundance, but in order so that we should be able to share, but that we should want to share. We shouldn't have that feeling of greed. And that's a very big thing that we ask that we daven. Because we know the famous thing that it says, that nobody, I think the line is, nobody goes to their grave with half of what they desire in their hands. We always want more. That's human nature. We have to obviously transform that to wanting more good things, in a sense, more spiritual growth. But here what we're asking for is that we should have plenty. Yes, we should. We should have a bounty. But we should feel, in a sense, that the bounty has been given to us in order for us to help others and not to, so to speak, become, as in a simple way, greedy. Okay, then we go on and we say, v'sabenu, okay, let me just see in the actual wording. So we say, l'tayva, right, t'vasa l'tayva, that it should all be for good. And we say, v'sein bracha, or v'sein talumata l'vracha, as we mentioned, it all goes by the land of Israel, because we go by the seasons, and our blessings come through the land of Israel. Al pnei ha'adama, on the face of the earth. Interesting language, on the face of the earth. So simply that could just mean that it should be visible blessings, that there should be enough that we should see it as enough, and there should be enough that we all know and are aware. But also, al pnei ha'adama, some people say, refers to that we are actually asking Hashem, this is very interesting, that the wealthy people become wealthier. Why should the wealthy people become wealthier? So it explains that a healthy society actually does have wealthy people. Because when there are wealthy people, hopefully, and if they're, you know, following the right way, but generally we do find overall, what happens is, obviously with also everybody else picking up, what we're saying is that if there are wealthy people, then there will be more prosperity in the land. And the ripple effect is that even the poorer people are less poor. Obviously, sometimes, unfortunately, we find countries where there's only the rich and the poor. We're not talking about that. But we're saying that if it's a healthy society, it is actually very good for the society that there should be abundance. And even if it's a little bit skewed and there are some people that have a little bit more, that's okay. They will in turn generate growth because their ambition will generate growth. And the ripple effect is that everybody will have what to eat. So that's what we're asking for here as well, that the whole society should become wealthier. But then we're asking for something more, it says. We say, Visabenu mituvecha, and satisfy us from your bounty. What does satisfy us from your bounty? So this is also very interesting, because even though we're asking for prosperity, and we want a lot, but the truth is it's not the amount, we know. We know that a person can have a limited amount, obviously not too little, but a limited amount, and they can still feel very, very satisfied. So first of all, we have beautiful psukim in the Torah that tell us this, like the brachas, it says, you will eat your food to satiety, right? So you'll eat only a little bit of bread, this is what we all want, and we'll feel full. Imagine if we could sit down to a meal, have a small plate, and we're fine, we don't want to eat anymore. That, the truth is, that's a blessing in the food, where the food, a little bit, can satisfy us, so to speak, a lot. And this is part of the bracha that we're asking for, but we're obviously also asking V'sabeinu mituvecha, that he should satisfy us from your bounty every single day, as we said, the Baal Shem Tov said, but also more than that. And I just want to show you one more thing. I'm sorry, we're just going back to what we were talking before, because I just want to read you. Sorry, just one small thing, a beautiful, the way that Reb Sham Shmuel Fol Hirsch puts it. Sorry to be a bit all over the place. But he says it very beautifully. He says that before the coming of Mashiach, there will be such greed, as we talked about greed, that despite the fact that the grape crop will be abundant, the wine producers will demand high prices for it. They would rather waste it than sell it cheaply. We do find that, unfortunately, people throw out food in order so that the prices shouldn't go down. People will have huge appetites for riches, which can never be satiated. And he says, despite the fact that the world overproduces food, millions of people are still starving. If it would not be for greed, all the food in the world would be properly distributed amongst the population, and everybody would have enough to eat. However, since the goodness of God is missing, and that's the component that's missing, and that's what we're asking for, so what happens? People are never satisfied. Never satisfied, they can never get enough. And therefore we ask Hashem, satiate us with your goodness. Give us enough food and money and possessions for our needs, and give us that feeling of being satisfied, which will obviate our greed and lust for more and more, a desire that can never be satisfied. And this, unfortunately, we see it so strongly now, but this is what we're davening for, that it should change, and definitely that we shouldn't live with that. But just to conclude with one beautiful idea, when we talk about the Sabeinu Mitzvecha, that Hashem should satisfy us with your goodness, this bracha and many of the brachas that we have in Shemayna Esrei are taken from different prophecies, that whether Yeshayahu, Isaiah, Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, from different psukim, different verses from their prophecies. And this one that says the source is, and I'll read you a beautiful pasuk, it's from the Navi Yirmiyahu. And he says beautifully, he's talking about that there will come a time, and he says, Uba'u v'rananu b'marayim, they will come and they will sing joyously on high, and we're of Tzion. V'naharu el tov Hashem, they will stream to the goodness that comes from Hashem. And then he continues, Al dagon v'al siraish v'al yitzar. Usually we say, why are they streaming and why are they singing? They are singing because they have an abundance of grain, of wine, and of oil. But if you look at the words literally, it says al. Al in Hebrew means on. It could also mean about, but it literally, just a simple explanation, is on, which means that there will come a time when we will be drawn and we will be singing and we will be joyous and we will be going to Tzion with a joy and with the with a feeling of satisfaction much greater than the satisfaction we receive from the physical prosperity, which is what we are asking for. Make us satisfied with just a little bit of physicality, that we should be well, that we should be healthy, that we should be able to have concentration, and therefore, where will we focus our minds on the bountiful goodness that we can achieve, that we can accomplish by coming close to Hashem in Tzion. So that's really the hope. And that's what Yirmiyahu was saying in his prophecy. And this is what we are asking for. So we ask Hashem for the blessings, and we finish and we say very beautifully, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mevarech Hashanim. And we mentioned this last week about specifically the allotment of the year, right? That Hashem should bless the years. But one beautiful thing that the commentaries tell us is that when we say this word, the years, we're not referring to the past. We're not even referring to the present. We're asking Hashem to bless us according to the good years that have yet to come, that are about to come. The years that we are anticipating, which we will lead on to soon, the years of the times of Mashiach. And what we want is that now, when we have all the physical abundance and the physical prosperity, the material prosperity that we need to live, we should be able to enjoy it. We should be able to partake of it with the proper attitude that it's a means to an end, a way to serve Hashem better, which also, as we said before, helps us, and not only helps us, but it gives us that proper perspective, and thereby we are able, not only able, but we want to share what we have with everybody around us. And this is the beautiful bracha. So we're asking for the future, in a sense. Not for the future, but we're asking that the now, we should almost have a taste of the future. And the other last beautiful thing that it says, that what should we concentrate on when we say this bracha, and this is quite a cute one, we should specifically have in mind, obviously we're talking generally all of our material needs, but very, very specifically, we should have in mind that Hashem should give us enough wheat for matzah, enough fruits for a good esrog, that's what we should be davening for, that we should get a good esrog, and enough grapes for good wine for Kiddush. It's a very interesting thing because in a sense, what it should, we actually mean this practically, that we do ask Hashem and we do want to be able to fulfill his specific mitzvahs properly. But obviously this is also in a broad sense, the idea that we should be able to enjoy, we should have prosperity, but we should always have the focus that the prosperity enables us to do mitzvahs, and we should be able to use it to do mitzvahs properly. There's one last beautiful thing, and this also ties into this idea, that although, as we mentioned, Hashem already decided at the beginning of the year what we're going to have, right? On Rosh Hashanah, He already put in what we're going to have, right? But there's one thing that Hashem doesn't decide on Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara tells us that what He doesn't decide is, He doesn't decide how, what, so to speak, excluded from those expenses are the amount of money that we spend on Shabbos, the amount of money that we spend on tuition for our children to get a good education, a good Jewish education, that is not included in the amount of money that has been designated. And here we ask Hashem that He should increase and that He should give us a tremendous amount. That's what He decides every single day, watching us on how much we are willing to spend on these tremendous mitzvahs. And it says that the more we spend on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and the more we spend on the chinuch of our children, and the more we spend on tzedakah, the more we actually receive. It generates more, in a sense, of the bracha. Okay, that's this bracha. So this is, now we have concluded the section that we said of the personal, right, of the individual, if you want to say, where we are individually speaking to Hashem. Now we come to, as we called it, where we are all asking for communal needs, the spiritual communal. And this bracha, the next bracha, is actually a very, very, very beautiful one. So I'll just read it to you. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was almost exactly the same. Maybe it was one word that was different. Not even sure. Yeah, there's one word only that was different. So we'll just read the bracha and we'll see. Okay, so it says, Tika b'shoifar gadol l'cheiruseinu. Sound the great shofar, l'cheiruseinu, for our freedom. V'sanes l'kabetz galuyaseinu, and raise the banner to gather our exiles. The title of this bracha is the ingathering of the exiles. That's what it is. That's what we're davening for. The ingathering of the exiles. And we say, V'kapzeinu yachad, gather us together, may arba kanfais ha'aretz, from the four corners of the earth. In the Nusach Ari, we have le'artzeinu, to our land, because that's where Hashem will gather us. He will gather us into our land. Baruch Ata Hashem, mekabetz nidchei ama Yisrael. We bless you, Hashem, who gathers the dispersed of the people of Israel. Okay, this is a very, very beautiful bracha. Now we're moving, as we say, to the communal ones. The first question that comes up is, what is the difference between this bracha, and we've already had a bracha similar. Remember, in Re'eina Vanyenu, we called it the bracha of Geula, the bracha of redemption, and here it sounds like we're again speaking about redemption. We will see that this is not specifically about redemption. This is more about one detail of the redemption that actually precedes the redemption. That's the ingathering of the exiles. But there's a few few differences. They say that this bracha we can see now comes into the category of the communal, whereas before it was more where we were personal, asking personally for a personal redemption. Here we are asking not just that we should be gathered, but that all of Israel should be gathered. That's one difference. Some people say that the previous one was more of a personal, a physical salvation, although we did say it also was spiritual, but this is definitely talking about a spiritual salvation. And the other one also is, when we asked Hashem to free us from oppression, so we say it's like freedom from oppression. Here we mentioned the word freedom, right? But here we're talking about a freedom where Hashem literally takes us out of all of the oppression, and both physically and spiritually, moves us to a different space, to the land of Israel. So it's a very different bracha in that way. We have to understand, what are we exactly asking for, and what's the depth of this most magnificent, beautiful bracha? There's one thing, I don't know where I put it. It's the 10th bracha, and it's very specific, but we'll see soon. It corresponds, and I forgot which one it is. I'll find it soon in my notes, because it corresponds now. The second set sort of correspond to the early ones. Oh, that's right. Interesting. This is the first of the communal, and it corresponds to one of the first of the individual, which was where we asked Hashem, Ata Chaynein La'adam Das, that you should give us knowledge and understanding. What's the connection between knowledge and understanding and the ingathering of the exiles? Because we say that at the time of the ingathering of the exiles, the world will be filled with the knowledge of Hashem. Umala ha'aretz deya. The word is again, deya es Hashem, that the world will be filled with the knowledge of Hashem. People will have the wisdom, and that's what will happen. The world will be filled with the wisdom of God. People will become aware, and we'll see soon that the Jewish people will be so aware that it will, if you want to say, it will arouse us and it will get us to move. Sometimes we feel inspired, but we still sit, you know, we can still sit there, we can still fall asleep, we can still remain the same. Here we're talking about an inspiration that moves us, so that we actually move ourselves. That's what we're saying, we move to Israel. And the idea is, it corresponds to the concept, as we're saying, of the wisdom of Hashem filling the earth. Okay, but let's understand here in detail more about this specific bracha. Okay, so when we talk about the ingathering of the exiles, and this we know is a very important part of our belief, that there will come a time that Hashem will gather the exiles. Some people say that we are already witnessing a little bit of it, and the truth is we are. Many people are moving from all over the world. However, we are really waiting for the ultimate time of Mashiach, when every single Jew, no matter where they are, geographically and spiritually, will be moved, so to speak, and will actually move. And that Hashem will accomplish. However, we are starting to see the seeds of it now, and this is the most beautiful, beautiful bracha. So let's see. He says like this. I wanted to show you, where do we find this in the Torah? Where do we find this concept that we will have the ingathering of the exiles? So the famous, first we look in the Chumash. The Chumash itself tells us, this is a promise that Moshe Rabbeinu gave us at the end of Chumash Devarim, and it says like this, Vishav Hashem Alikecha Es Shvuscha, Hashem will bring back your remnants, and he will have mercy upon you, right? This is in Chumash Devarim. And he will once again gather you from amongst the nations. And he says, Im yihyeni dachacha b'kzei ha-shamayim, even if you are dispersed to the ends of the heaven, Misham yikabetzcha, from there Hashem will gather you, Umisham yikachechecha, from there Hashem will take you. Hashem will bring you back. And Hashem will, as he says, he will bring you to the land that your ancestors occupied, and you too will occupy it. Hashem will be good to you and make you flourish even more than your ancestors. Now, I just want to read you, I know it's just so beautiful, it's just a Rashi, but I know it's a famous Rashi, that's what I mean, but I can't help but read you, because this is actually something that we have in mind, that we should be able to picture while we're saying this bracha. It gives us a real imagery that we could actually even picture. And this is just Rashi, this is not, you know, Kabbalistic stuff, this is real simple meaning of the pasuk. And Rashi tells us, what does it mean that Hashem will return your captivity? And the language is used, Vishav Hashem, that Hashem will return. Rashi says, it should have written, Veheshiv, that Hashem, your God, will return. And rather it says, then Hashem, it sounds like Hashem himself will return. And it does mean that. Not that he will bring us, not that he will cause us to return, he will, so to speak, draw us, rather he himself will return. So Rashi says that our rabbis learned from here, kivyachol, it's as if, shashchina, first of all, shashchina shruya im Yisrael. That's the first thing that we have to imagine, and we have to realize, and we have to really acknowledge. When we talk about Hashem gathering us up from all of the ends of the earth, from the furthest corners of the earth, what we have to realize is that at the moment, Hashem is with us in those furthest corners, wherever we find ourselves. And as we say, this is not just geographically. So first of all, Hashem is with us. Bitzaras galusam, in the hardships of their exile. Ukishenegalin, and when we are redeemed, then what do we say? That Hashem himself is redeemed with us, first of all. Then we say, and even more the picture, we say that Gadol Yoim Kibbutz Galias, that's what we're talking about here, the day of Kibbutz Galias, the day of the ingathering of the exiles. The day is so great, and it is so difficult. It's, in other words, what he means by difficult is it is so monumental. Ki'ilu hu atzma, it's as if Hashem himself, he has to actually hold each and every person with his hand, mamish, ish ish mim kaimai, each person from their place. And he brings a pasuk which tells us, va'atem tuluktu la'achad echad bnei Yisrael, you shall be gathered one by one, children of Israel. Which means, what we picture in this bracha is Hashem literally taking us by the hand, each and every one of us individually, and leading us from wherever we are, from the darkest space where we find ourselves, from the corners of the earth, from the furthest spot, and leading us back to Jerusalem. This is what he's saying. This is what will happen. And that's what he says, and I will return the captivity from Egypt. He already has done it, and he will do it in the future again. There are beautiful, beautiful psukim in all the different prophecies which talk about the time of the gathering. And I'll just read you just quickly, just one or two from in the English, of like in Yecheskel, it says, so says Hashem your Lord, he's promising us, behold, I will take the children of Israel from among the nations where they have gone, and I will gather them from every side, and I will bring them to their land. So these are all promises. And it says that Hashem will take us, we won't say anymore that, in Yirmiyahu it says, we won't say anymore that it is Hashem who brought up the children of Israel from the land of Egypt, but rather we will say who brought us up and who brought the seed of the house of Israel from the northern land and from all the lands where I have driven them, and they shall dwell in their land. In other words, it will be our experience that we will be drawn and we will be brought back. A very important thing that is part of this bracha is also to internalize the true belief, not just generally of the coming of Mashiach, but specifically of this aspect, of the ingathering of the exiles. And we know what the Rambam writes. The Rambam tells us about, in his sefer is a sefer halacha, as we say, halacha means it's a verdict, this is what has to be, you know, this is a halacha, Shem keeps the halacha. So it says that what will happen is, in the time of Mashiach, a messianic king will arise, and he will renew the Davidic dynasty. What will he do? He will build the temple and gather the dispersed of Israel. That's a very important part. He will mekabetz nitchei Israel. That's part of the job of Mashiach. And it says, if he does, and it's interesting the wording, he says, im asav etzliach, first of all, he will fight the wars and he will be successful. Then he is what we call cheskas Mashiach. Then he is we consider him Mashiach. But then if he does the following, if he succeeds and he builds the temple in its place and gathers the dispersed of Israel, then he is what we call Mashiach Vadai. Then he is definitely Mashiach. So this is a very important component of the coming of Mashiach. And now we lead on to one of the beautiful, beautiful psukim in Yeshayahu, which is actually where a lot of the words of our bracha is taken from. And this is a very famous pasuk because there's lots of songs with it, and we say it also in the davening on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. We say, V'hoya b'yayim hahu, and it shall come to pass on that day, Yitaka b'shoifar gadol, that a great shofar will be sounded, Uvahu ha'ovdim be'eretz Ashur, and those lost in the land of Assyria, v'hanidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim, and those who are exiled in the land of Egypt, what will happen to them? They will all come, v'hishtachavu la'Hashem b'har HaKodesh, they will bow to Hashem before the Lord in the, you know, holy mountain, b'Yerushalayim in Yerushalayim. It's a very important pasuk, and we really have to analyze that pasuk a little bit because that is very connected to how we began our bracha. Tika, we say tika b'shofar gadol. We don't just say blow the shofar, rather we say the big shofar. It's very interesting. On Rosh Hashanah, and even in the times when where we had a shofar that Hashem blew in previous times, the one time that we have a famous shofar is when we receive the Torah at Har Sinai, which we're almost coming to Shavuos. And at Har Sinai, it doesn't say a shofar gadol. It just says a shofar. Hashem blew a shofar. And here we say a shofar gadol. We have to understand why. The other thing is interesting that when we talk about these shofars that Hashem is blowing, one at Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai, and one when Mashiach will come, we know the famous thing that it says, where do those shofars come from? So they both come from the isle, the ram of Yitzchak. You know that when Avraham was going to sacrifice Yitzchak, and Hashem said, no, I don't want you to sacrifice him. Instead, he sacrificed the ram. And it says that the two shofars on the ram, so the left side was used at Har Sinai, and the right side, the right shofar is still waiting. That's what we call the shofar gadol, the bigger shofar, and that's what we're waiting to hear, and Hashem will blow it when he gathers in the exiles. I just want to do, just simply first, before we go a little bit more in depth about what this means, just to understand the wording here as we're saying it. So it's actually quite beautiful. So Hashem is going to, well, first of all, we don't even say Hashem, right? We say tika, just blow. Why don't we say Hashem should blow? Because the word tika, which we're referring to Hashem blowing, we don't even want to use Hashem's name because we're referring to a very high level of godliness which has no name, the essence of God. Because in order to gather in the exiles from wherever we are, we need, so to speak, the highest level of God who we don't even call by name. And he will blow the big shofar, l'cheiruseinu, which will give us freedom. But I just want to, on a simple level, just explain something. Then it says, what will he do? So first we will hear the shofar. And then he will raise a banner. If he blows the shofar, why do we need a banner? What's the purpose of both of them? It sounds like he needs both of them to gather in the exiles. So just on a simple level, we can understand. First, we hear. And when you hear, it's like an alarm. You wake up. It arouses you. It's like, wow, something amazing is about to happen. And it's, as we said, it's Hashem from the deepest sense blowing the highest, the most powerful shofar, which is the holiest shofar. So therefore, it affects us in the deepest parts of ourselves, and we're aroused. But we don't know where to go. We're just like awakened, and we're so stimulated, and we're so ready. But where should we go? So then we say, what does Hashem do? He raises a banner. The banner shows us where to go. Now you can follow the banner. You know where you're meant to be going, heading towards the direction of Jerusalem. And that's what the banner is. But also, you see the word, it's so beautiful. The word for banner, everything's exact in, you know, in Lashon Kodesh, in the Holy Tongue. So the word for banner is nes, a miracle. It's a banner. It's a flag. It shows us where to go. But we ask Hashem that he should gather in the exiles in a miraculous way. First of all, it's definitely a miracle. There's no question about it. But even still, there are more natural ways of gathering people. We're asking Hashem, and we want it to be done in a miraculous way. Because if it's done in a miraculous way, there's no pain involved. There's no suffering. It's just the most beautiful, momentous kind of a thing where everybody will come together. What we have to picture, and we'll discuss in a minute, is what this means. And this is quite incredible. When we talk about us being dispersed, we don't just mean physically, right? As we said, we also mean spiritually. But what that means is not just that some of us find ourselves in a distant place, but it also means that at the moment, unfortunately, we know, even when we live close to each other, we don't feel united. We don't feel as one. We feel quite distant from each other, whether it be because we have different views on things or whether it be because we actually don't agree on fundamental perspectives that we have, or we're just living totally different lives. So part of this bracha, and this is such a beautiful thing that we have to picture and imagine, and this is something that's hard for us because when we think about it, it's like so foreign from human nature, is that there will come a time that we will truly be united. We will have the same perspective in a sense. We will see godliness in such a clear way that everything will be clarified. We will be truly united. And this is part of this bracha, this concept of the unity that Hashem will achieve between all of us. So this is what we're also saying, V'sonneis l'kabeitz galu yaseinu. I just want to go back into to see in the order, and then we're going to go a little bit more. Time goes so, so fast. Wow. But I just want to go a little bit in order of, because otherwise I miss. We mentioned the Shofar of Matan Torah, of the giving of the Torah, which was also a tremendous thing. And, you know, the whole world was shaking when Hashem blew the Shofar. There's other times that Hashem blows the Shofar. We know the famous miracle that when the Jewish people actually entered the land of Israel, in the time of Yehoshua, it says that he blew the Shofar, remember, and the walls of Jericho, the walls of Jericho fell down. It's actually very beautiful. At the time, they blew the Shofar 7 times, and each time, you know, they surrounded the walls, and the walls collapsed. So it's another miracle that happened with the blowing of the Shofar. Also, it says that when David HaMelech was anointed and when he was announced as king, they blew the Shofar. And so too here we will have the Shofar. So the Shofar in Yiddishkeit, even though we have the psukim that the Shofar instills, it's sort of like a level of fear, but it's a positive aspect of fear. It is this awe, this awesomeness, revelation of godliness. And that's what the Shofar actually represents. There's one commentary, the Radak, that says it might not be we might not actually hear a physical Shofar. He says it could be, he says, people will gather together as if there had been a great Shofar. The point being that they will be moved, they will be inside, they will be so moved, and they will all come running back and gather together to Jerusalem. One also very beautiful idea before, as I said, is, I don't know if we'll manage to get to one other concept, but Rav Chaim Shofar Hirsch also explains very beautifully, we mentioned over here the word cheruseinu, right, freedom. Now, freedom is an interesting word, because freedom, as we, you know, freedom is such a positive thing. I think in the U.S. that's the buzzword, right, the Constitution, it's all about freedom. But we know that freedom can have some negative connotations, because freedom, if it's just an end to itself, is nothing. What do we want freedom for? We want freedom so that we can serve Hashem. We don't want freedom as an end in itself. We want freedom as a means to an end. And that's a very important thing to remember. He says freedom means to remove all blockages, all things which stop us from being able to do what we need to do, from being able to accomplish. Once all those blockages have been removed, then we have a void. And the question is what we're going to do with that void. So if we're just going to become self-absorbed and just decide that all we want is our freedom for the sake of freedom so that we can exercise whatever we're in the mood of doing, that's a negative thing. But if we use that void, which means that that everything has been removed which stops us, and now we feel empowered, which is real freedom, and we are able to accomplish, and we use that to serve Hashem, that's the Gadol HaCheruseinu. That's the true freedom that we are davening for. And this is what we're asking for. So we're actually asking that we should recognize this and daven and really use the freedom that we have nowadays in the proper way, as much as we possibly can. Just wanted to see if there was one other, some beautiful things here. There are so many beautiful, but I also wanted to share from these. Okay. Oh, okay. Just one more thing I just want to share from the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma says like this. He says a very beautiful thing. He says, I'll just read you. He says, Hashem will bring back the remnants and have mercy upon you. And that's what the Pasuk says. And he will gather you from among all the nations where he has scattered you. So he says that those captive Jews who pine for the land of Israel and want to escape from other lands as if from prison, they will return first. Okay, so we have a very interesting thing, and we're going to see it in that pasuk that we read from Yeshayahu that says that what will happen is Hashem will gather us from the land of Ashur and from Egypt, right? He said, the ones who have been sent to Ashur, which is in English Assyria, or the ones in Egypt. And they actually symbolize two different types of Jews, so to speak, two different experiences of exile. Sometimes, and I think we can now say we fit into this category, we can be in a place called Ashur. The word Ashur in Hebrew, actually it's with an aleph, but it means happiness, joy, but we're not talking in such a positive sense. We're talking about a place where we feel pleasure, a place where we are very, very comfortable. Sometimes we are in exile, and it's true. Intellectually, we're aware that we want the building of the temple and we want to be together, but we're really happy where we are. We are extremely comfortable. Life is very good. Even spiritually, we're comfortable and we're able to serve Hashem. We are in a place called Ashur. And those places, we not only, it's not just that we can't be gathered, we don't want to. We don't feel a need. We don't even feel a yearning to come back. Sometimes, unfortunately, we're in an exile of Mitzrayim. And the word Mitzrayim is from the word Meitzar, Tsar, like Tsara, difficulty, strain, when we are really constrained and we are really in a very, if you want to say that, unfortunately, throughout history, we know that the Jews have found themselves in that situation many times. Even today, there are some Jews who do find themselves in countries where it is extremely difficult to be Jewish and extremely difficult to live. Two different experiences. The Pasuk alludes, and this is what we daven for in this bracha, in our, even though we don't mention those two places in the bracha, but the bracha is taken from that verse, that Hashem will gather us from both of those kinds of exiles. As the Meshech Chachma says, in a way, the harder one is from Eretz Ashur, when we're very comfortable, when we're very happy where we are. That's why Hashem has to blow a big shofar. A tekah b'shofar gadol, because we are in such a comfortable state that we don't hear the simple shofar blowing. We're just happy where we are. But Hashem will blow the big shofar, and He will extract us from whichever state we might find ourselves. And we will be gathered, and it says actually interesting that perhaps we will be the second ones gathered. The first ones will be the ones who will run immediately as soon as the opportunity arises, because they're not happy where they are. But the second set will run because they finally realize that it's not ideal where they are. They want to be where Hashem is revealed, and that is in Jerusalem. Just very quickly, I want to share one beautiful idea. One more thing, and I think I might share the other idea next week about just a drop more. I thought I would even finish the next bracha. It doesn't matter, but we will get. I just want to share one more beautiful thing. When we talk about v'kapseinu yachad, that Hashem will gather us together. Remember, we said that now we are quite split, right? We're all different, we have our different views. Very fascinating thing. Where do we find the first place that we are given the bracha, so to speak, or the vision of the fact that there will come a time when Mashiach will come and we will be gathered together? So if we think about it in the Chumash, the first time that we have it is when Yaakov Avinu, it says when he wanted to bless the tribes, he wanted to bless his sons before he passed away. And the Pasuk tells us that what happened was he said, Hey Asfu, gather, va'agida lachem, and I will tell you, es asher yikra itchem, what will happen to you, ba'achris hayamim, at the end of days. And we are told that really what Yaakov wanted was to reveal at that point when Mashiach will come. And then Hashem made him have a lapse and he forgot, so he couldn't share it because Hashem did not want us to know exactly when Mashiach will come. But the Pasuk is a very interesting one. First of all, if you see, it says, Asher Yikra Itchem. It's interesting. So the word Asher Yikra, we translate what will happen to you at the end of times. But the truth is, the word Yikra can also be Kara. will call. I want to let you know that something will actually call you, this great loud shofar. Be aware and be in tune to listen out for that sound of the great shofar that will call you back. And that's why he says, what will happen, what Yaakov is alluding to, hey Osfu, at the time that you will hear that great shofar, realize that that will be a time, an opportune time, that you will actually be able to gather together and be able to hear Hashem's word in a united way. This is something that we're all really waiting for. It's a beautiful bracha that we're waiting for. And the last very beautiful thing that I want to share today, Me'arba Kanfei Sa'aretz, from the four, we just translated, corners of the earth. But the word kanfais also means wings. So a very beautiful way it says. It says the entire world will be lifted. The earth will have sort of sprouted wings. When we're talking about us being gathered from the exile, what does it mean? It almost sounds like, so we will be all come from everywhere, and all the rest of the earth will be left with this void, like there won't be any Jewish people, and there won't be any holiness, in any of any goodness, so to speak. All the good people will be extracted and be brought. So we say, no, that's not how we have to picture it. The entire world will be lifted. Everything. If we live where we live now, and we live properly, and we do serve Hashem, obviously we are causing and we are accomplishing that we are elevating the world. And therefore, when the time will come, that's why we use that word, knafayim, like kanfei sa'aretz, that everything, so to speak, the earth will have sprouted wings, and the earth in every direction will experience an uplifting of the spirit. People everywhere will realize that they have to change their lives. There will be a moral uplifting in the world. So wherever the world is, the whole world will be lifted. It's not just us physically moving. The entire world will be sprouting, so to speak, will be flying, like we can picture on like an eagle's wing, but the whole world will be elevated. And that's what will happen at that time, during the time of the ingathering of the exiles. In some ways we see, it's very interesting, the world now, I think there's like this extreme opposites that happen. In some ways the world is in quite a negative state, but in some ways we see so much spiritual yearning in the world. And this is part of the preparation of that time. So I'm going to finish here, but next time I will continue. I would just want to explain to you a little bit more about this big shofar and what this really symbolizes, according to Chassidus explains very, very beautifully. So we'll...